Rishut, Rabbi Lam, President Joel, Rosh Yeshiva, my parents, the Rav's grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, was credited as one who had formalized the way we approach the study of Torah, of Talmud in modern times. As Rav Schechter mentioned, a method of highly exacting analytical Talmud study, focusing on precise definitions and categorizations of Jewish law, used even now in yeshivot around the world, with a particular emphasis on the legal writings of the Rambam. And while for many years, Rav Chaim of Brisk played a prominent role in the yeshiva of Volozhin, his major role was the Rav of Brisk in Belarus. And I remember one time when someone brought into the Rav's apartment a copy of a headstone of the Ohel of the Netziv and of Rav Chaim. The Rav was amazed at seeing this headstone. It was in the time of the communist era. It wasn't easy to get to Warsaw where Rav Chaim is buried. And the Rav made a comment to the boys, to the Shamashim after the person left. And he said, while Rav Chaim was known for redefining Talmud study for all times, what he was really known for was being a Rav Chesed. And notice on how this stone, it doesn't mention the fact that he was in Volozhin, but rather Av Beis Din de Brisk. He was the rabbi of Brisk. For it was in Brisk when unmarried women gave birth and needed a place for their children to be deposited, to be taken care of, that they went to the doorstep of Rav Chaim. It was in Brisk where the woodshed that was given to him by his community to heat his home, that he refused to use the wood in the woodshed if that woodshed wasn't accessible to the poor. It was in Brisk when there was a fire in the town and Rav Chaim felt that the poor people's homes were not being rebuilt properly, that he slept on the burnt out wooden porches of the poor people's home, had all his meetings on those burnt out porches until the community understood its responsibilities. When people think of Rabbi Soloveitchik, they describe him and they refer to his brilliance. The fact that at 10 years old, he presented to his father some of his Chidushei Torah, which were sent to Rav Chaim, and then Rav Chaim sent them to the other Rabbanim in town, as is evident of what everyone has written about the Rav. The fact that his smicha from the Rav in Kovno just said, halacha kamoso b'chol makom, the law is like the Rav in every aspect, in every area of halacha. The letter that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik wrote when the Rav was a candidate for the chief rabbinate of Tel Aviv. The comments of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook when he met with the Rav, and he said, the power of the genius of the grandfather of Rav Chaim resides in the grandson. The comments of Rav Moshe Feinstein that the Rav was the Malamed of the generation. The comments of Rav Huttner, or the Rebbe of Lubavitch, who every time a little mamar was published, two shlichim would come to the Rav's apartment with a beautiful note to the Rav signed Mem Mem Schneerson. And even though these great leaders may have disagreed with the Rav on certain issues, whether it was the role of women in study or the importance of all forms of wisdom and philosophy, they all realized the greatness that they each had. They all respected each other. Unfortunately, a message that some of their students have forgotten. No family, since Rashi's in the 11th and 12th centuries, can boast as many influential Torah scholars as the Soloveitchik family. Whether it's the Beis Halevi, the Netziv, Rav Chaim of Volozhin, the Rav was a true student of the Soloveitchik family's Mesorah. He learned from his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and from his mother, Pesha Feinstein. The Rav was at home in any sugya in Shas, in any halachic ideal, and in any philosophic argument. He used his knowledge to introduce to us the full spectrum of Torah thought. In every shir, another color was woven into the tapestry of Mesorah he wished to communicate to his students. His clarity, his charisma, his excitement and intellectual integrity made his Daily Shiurim exciting and attracted many different types of thinkers and scholars. Young smicha students and veteran Rosh Yeshiva hung on every word he spoke. Talmudic scholars came from every yeshiva in the world to learn from this great master. Yeshiva University's Zman doesn't end in the beginning of Nisan. It ends towards Pesach time. So especially during those periods of time when the rest of the yeshiva world was already off, the Rav's shiur room was populated by an additional group of people that, let's just say, looked slightly different than the standard YU student. And while his philosophy of Judaism was often articulated through the ideals of Kant and Hegel, Kierkegaard and Cohen, it was predicated on the ideals of the Rambam. There is no Jewish community in the world that has not been touched by the Rav, his students, or his writings. But I do not have the Torah knowledge or capacity to expound on the Rav's greatness and learning. However, there are a few observations that I would like to share. In the Rav Shir, a student's age, his experience, his family name were all but irrelevant. What mattered was the truth. At times, the Rav would dismiss a veteran scholar's thesis in favor of a young student's suggestion. I will never forget the time when the Rav responded to several questions after a 2.5-hour shiur that was focused on presenting a specific idea. The Rav answered after shiur each question in a clear and precise fashion. But this young boy, this 19-year-old, asked the Rav a question. The Rav answered him, and then in a few minutes later asked me to bring the boy back over to him, where the Rav told him, "You were right, and I was wrong. Tomorrow we will study the topic based on the question you raised." The Rav loved teaching. As was mentioned already, the Rav loved to be called the Malamed, the teacher of the generation. I remember when we would open up his mail and read it to him, the most interesting part was often the way he was addressed. Dr. Soloveitchik, the Grand Rabbi, a whole bunch of titles put together. And one time I joked with him and said, "What title would you like?" His response was, "I simply want to be called the Malamed." When the Rav presented an argument between various schools of thought in the Talmud or amongst Rishonim, you felt as if the personalities being discussed were present in the room. It was in the Rav Shir in First Hall 401 that many of us felt when the Rav introduced Rashi that you could hear a creak in the door and that Rashi was walking in to sit next to the Rav as he articulated his position. And then Rabbeinu Tam would walk in, and the Rashba, and the Rif, and the Ravid. And in First Hall, we became closely acquainted with the personality, the language, and the demeanor of the Rav's good friend, the Rambam. We were once informed that due to the Rav's health, Shiurim had to be limited to only 2 hours, no more than 2 hours. And so the Rav agreed on a technique how to deal with this. We created clocks with hours, 1 hour, 1:30, and 2 o'clock. And the deal was, the Rav sat in front of a desk, students sat around him. We would just hand him at 1 o'clock a sheet that said 1 o'clock, 1:30 a sheet, and at 2 o'clock. And the first day, it worked great. After the 2 hour clock came, shiur was over. But the next day, that message was not really effective. Around 45 minutes after the 2 hour time, I found myself in a little bit of a quandary. How does a 22-year-old respond when the Gadol Hador is not following a medically prescribed limitations? Let's just say all eyes were on this interaction of how this dilemma would unfold. And after 45 minutes, I don't know how I did it, I got up, I stood up, and I announced that shiur was over. The Rav turned to me with a smile, then turned to the students in the class, and he said, "Even the Satan does not have as good as an assistant as I have." The boys laughed, and class was over. Let's just say the walk back to Morgenstern Hall was a little bit more silent than it normally was. And at lunch, the Rav asked me what was wrong. And I explained to him, I was not acting on my own accord, I was just following instructions. I would have loved to listen to Shir for longer. And the Rav responded that I should know better than the doctors. Because before Shir, he was often in pain. And in the afternoons after Shir, he was often in pain. But when he delivered Shir, he was pain-free. How correct he was. During those final years, as some of us had the privilege of being the Rav Shamish, the mornings and afternoons were often difficult. But during Shir, the Rav was pain-free. He would enter Shir with blurred sight, yet read the Gemara, Rambam, and Rashi, as if his sight was unimpaired. And so the next day in Shir, I decided not to remind the Rav when to stop. However, an hour and a half into Shir, the Rav turned to me and asked how much time he has left. And while the Rav had the reputation for being tough in Shir because he made demands on his Talmidim out of love for his commitment to being the best possible Melamed, outside of Shir, his demeanor was welcoming, gentle, and kind. The Rav had not only inherited Rav Chaim's intellect, he had internalized Rav Chaim's ideals of chesed. I remember how often people left the Rav's apartment with a sense of comfort, either because the Rav had a solution to their problem or simply because he had listened so intently. When the Rav heard a fellow human being's problem, be it that of Menachem Begin's or of a simple Jew sent by his or her rabbi, the Rav was so empathetic, you could see the pain and anguish on his face and his frail body. It became harder for him to walk, harder for him to sleep, and harder for him to eat. He was an ish chesed who truly felt the pain of others, happy when he could halachically solve their dilemma, pained when he could not, sleepless and steadfast when he had the opportunity to marshal his halachic arsenal to help another human being. I remember the constant, I don't want to call it fight, but it was a beautiful interaction between the Rav and Rabbi Lamb. The Rav and Rabbi Lamb would meet on a regular basis. Rabbi Lamb insisted that he go to the Rav's apartment. The Rav insisted that he was president of Yeshiva University, and every Rosh Yeshiva should visit him in his office. And so there was this conflict. We resolved it in the following fashion. 1 month, Rabbi Lamb would go to the Rav, and 1 month, the Rav would go to Rabbi Lamb. Whether it was a visiting Rosh Yeshiva, a head of state, or Mrs. O'Shea who cleaned the apartment, not because he created a mess, but because we did, the Rav treated everyone in a regal fashion, even when he was experiencing physical pain and discomfort. Towards the end of his tenure at Yeshiva University, he suffered from Parkinson's. It was hard for him to stand. It was often hard for him to walk. And I remember the night after I became engaged to my wife, Monday night, I said, the Rav's coming back on Tuesday. I would love to introduce you to the Rav. Tuesday night, after the Rav gave shir, after he flew in, he was very tired, but he heard my wife-to-be was at the door. He got out of his chair, walked to the door, opened the door for my wife, walked with my wife, waited till she sat down, and only then would he sit down. This is the way he treated everybody. He was a gentleman. And when we asked him if he would come to our wedding, he responded, he would come if he was invited. 20 years after his passing, I'm still in awe of the fact that in his search for a personal, romantic relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rav intellectually explored all aspects of the covenantal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yet in the Rav's existential journey, he concerned himself with the human condition. The Rav expressed this through the individuals he engaged, through the community he taught and inspired, and through his writings. He taught us all our responsibility as Torah Jews to care for the Jewish community and to advance general society. For the Rav, being an Ish Halacha also meant being an Ish Chesed. May his Torah continue to guide and inspire us.